This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
All right, many thanks to Steve Wiseman of the Raleigh News and Observer who joined us in hour number one. Right now we're joined by my favorite unverified follower on Twitter because he remains in the unverified category, which I'm proud of him. Luke Hancock joins us. Luke, first of all, happy holidays, man. Hope life's treating you well.
Happy holidays, guys. I got no complaints. Basketball is rolling, so I'm happy. Can't complain.
Before we get to breakdowns of Louisville's win, any truth to the fact that you were asked by Coach Mack to come help clean all the toilet paper from his front yard after the vandalism on Saturday night?
No, I'm avoiding that at all costs. Those guys, their houses are too big. There's too much to clean up when you got to TP all those trees. I'm glad I didn't get that call.
I love it.
Hey, Luke, Saturday was big for Coach Mack and the Cards, but, you know, let's pile on here for a minute. Cats aren't playing very well. Louisville found a way to get it done. I thought Carly Jones was sensational. But what did we learn about Chris Mack's team?
That they've got a certain level of toughness. You know, this isn't the star-studded Louisville team. This isn't the star-studded Kentucky team. I mean, I know I would have lost this bet if you had told me the best players on the floor would be a transfer from Radford and a transfer from Creighton for these two teams. But at the end of the day, these guys are tough. They found a way to get it done. I know it didn't look pretty against Wisconsin, but this was a big win for Chris Mack and for this Louisville team. If they can continue to get healthy, I know a lot of teams around the country feel that way, but if they can continue to get healthy, they're just going to get better and better and better. I love the backcourt for this team. The front court got to get a little bit better, got to get a little tougher, but what they showed in that Kentucky game, I was really impressed with. And Kentucky made their run. They're a team that's going to get better week by week. We know that with Coach Cal's teams. But for Louisville to come out with the win in a close game like that, it was very impressive to me.
Luke, you'll read my mind because I just mentioned in the previous segment, If's the biggest word in sports, but if Louisville can get everybody healthy and on board, are they the best team in this crazy ACC, which doesn't seem to have an alpha right now? Everybody's kind of looking for somebody to take ownership.
Well, that's a scary thought reading your mind, Mark Packer, but I will say this. If Louisville can get Malik Williams healthy at that five spot, they're going to be a totally different team. He is a guy that brings the energy on both ends of the floor. He's been a two-time captain. He's had a foot injury and is supposed to be out for the majority of this season. But if they can get some front court help, this Louisville team can absolutely be one of the best teams in the ACC. I still like a few others out there. I know everybody's kind of had their struggles with this crazy season, but I do think if Louisville can continue to just get healthy. I know that's a tough thing when you just have to play the waiting game sometimes, but Charles Mendland's going to add a ton of depth in that backcourt. And then the bigs are playing fine. The young big guys like Jalen Withers and Quinn Slezinski holding their own. They're playing really, really tough. I mean, for crying out loud, Olivier Saar stepped into that game. He's got a 5-inch, probably 40-pound size advantage on Jalen Withers. For some reason, he took the last shot, but he had 1 point and one rebound and playing over 20 minutes. That's about toughness. That's about fight from Jalen Withers, and I was really impressed with Louisville's front court.
All right, let's move from the Cards to the rest of this league. Bad news at Pittsburgh last week with the Champagne and Audis Tony injury. We mentioned Rodney Miller's done for the year at Miami. Luke, in addition to the uncertainty of just what college basketball is going to be, now we're combining the unknown into this, the unknown on how the games are going to get played, the unknown on who's doing what. And I mentioned this to Pac. We've melted this non-conference schedule, which is usually 13, 14 games, down into about four or five at most for some. And I think it's adding to the development of these teams. And as a result, we're going to go to January not knowing very much.
I totally agree. I know you guys have talked about the glob in the middle, and what I think has happened is that the middle has gotten much better and the top not so much. Some of these new recruits, some of the young talent, they just haven't had as much time to really develop in the preseason, like you just said. Those guys need those early games, some of those, no offense, some of those cupcake games where guys can go out and have big-time nights like Jalen Johnson for Duke, who had close to a 20-20 game to start the season. He needed those confidence-building, developmental games early on in the season, and UNC's no different, Florida State's no different, Virginia's no different, and then when you start to look at the teams in the middle, they need some of those games to have the dress rehearsal, to go out there and try and look a little crisp. You want to learn most of your mistakes in some of those wins. It's a lot easier to go back and watch the film when you have a W on the board because you won by 20 or 25 and you get a freshman some valuable time, some valuable experience. But these teams don't have that this year. So I think, you know, the old Mike Bray saying where you want to get old and stay old in this league, those teams I think are going to be most successful when you get down the road here.
Look, I want to go back though to the Louisville game. What does this mean for Louisville fans coming off a disappointing football season, which was high expectations and didn't live up to it? Yeah, I know Kentucky's one and whatever in hoops, but that's a big blue problem. What does this win mean, though, for the Louisville fan base around the holidays?
Well, first thing, you guys know about great rivalries. I think back to that game we were at last year, an overtime game, 98-96. A really struggling Carolina team goes in there and had plenty of chances to win the game against Duke. One of the craziest finishes I've ever seen in a basketball game, and to do it at that level was insane. You knew this was going to be a great rivalry game. Whether they're 1-6, 6-1, it doesn't matter. Fans around here, they care so much about this game. I guarantee you Kentucky fans would have said, hey, we may have stunk this year, but at least we beat Louisville. For Chris Mack to get this notch in his belt is fantastic. And I'll tell you this, guys, leading up to this game, we do a radio show around here. We had all kinds of fans calling in. This is the first year I thought both fan bases were fully 100% convinced they were going to find a way to lose this game. Louisville does not have the record on their side against Coach Calipari, and Kentucky, they're obviously struggling. I mean, like I said, if the best player on your team is Davion Mintz, he's got to be a guy who facilitates, who still scores the basketball but gets good shots for everybody else. This team's going to struggle until that changes.
All right, Luke, let's be honest, though. Cal hit the schedule card in the postgame, right? I overscheduled. I scheduled too good. Now, wait a second. We're talking about Morehead State. We're talking about Richmond. We're talking about KU, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame. Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, that's 9-12 in the ACC preseason poll here.
I guess he just loaded up with too many ACC teams, guys. I don't know what to tell you. You know, it's been a rough going for Kentucky. At this point, you take your lumps. I mean, I watched almost every post-game press conference with Roy Williams last year, and I saw the frustration. I saw he just got more and more upset every week. Cal seems to be going that direction. It's crazy since this pandemic started what it's done to some of these blue bloods. But if you're going to lose to Richmond and you're going to lose to Georgia Tech and you're going to lose to Notre Dame, I mean, it's not over scheduling. It's your team's not ready to go. And again, like I said, these young guys need some of these early games to get their mistakes out of the way, to have some correctable things on film to go back and watch where they can really learn how to play the game, how to play winning basketball. Not just, hey, how many threes can I get off? How many highlight reel dunks can I have? Those things aren't winning you games right now. And if I'm Kentucky basketball, you really got to take a step back and evaluate who you are this season. They are obviously struggling. But to me, you've got a lot of high recruits on that team. It's time for them to show up. It's time for B.J. Boston to look a little better. It's time for Terrence Clark to look a little better. And you brought in Olivier Saar for a reason. Like I said, he's 7'1". He had some huge games last year. He's going up against a freshman, Jalen Withers. He's only got 1 point and one rebound that whole game. And they still go to him with the last second shot, the same exact shot they had against Notre Dame. So they have confidence in the guy. It's just a matter of putting this all together. Shot just barely rimmed out. Kentucky had a chance to win it at the end, but Louisville finds a way to get it done. And I thought it exemplified toughness. Those last 3 minutes in every basketball game, especially these rivalry games, are all about toughness. Louisville came up with the 50-50 balls, secured it on the offensive and defensive end, got to the free throw line, and got it done.
Luke, it was kind of a good news, bad news Saturday for the ACC. Obviously, the Cards taking care of business, knocking off Kentucky was the good. The bad was the ACC preseason pick, Virginia, goes up against the Zags. And, I mean, I'll tell you what, Gonzaga looks fantastic. I just don't know if they're going to lose a game. But that was a woodshed job. That was a, hey, this is what elite looks like in the 20-21 season. Your take on Virginia so far early this year?
Well, I thought Tony Bennett said it best, and this was short and sweet. That was important but painful. a lot of lessons learned against that Zags team, because they are as good as it gets, as complete a basketball team as I have seen in college basketball, maybe since Virginia won it. I line up a lot of these guys, and I think, man, there are some serious similarities to the Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter team that went and won a national championship with Corey Kisper, with Jalen Suggs, with Drew Timmy on the inside. This Gonzaga team has all the pieces to the puzzle. Their big-time players played absolutely lights out. I know Corey Kispert set a Gonzaga record, or tied a Gonzaga record for threes made, but they seemed to get everything easy. I think it was his fifth, maybe sixth three that finally was contested for Gonzaga. That's not going to win you basketball games, and that's not what you can expect from Tony Bennett. It's a crazy game to me, but I go back and look at turnovers. Gonzaga scored 19 points off turnovers in the first half. And I always look at assist to turnover ratio, and I said it that way to add some emphasis. Gonzaga was almost a 4-to-1 assist to turnover ratio.
Right.
Virginia had a turnover to assist ratio. That's not how you're going to get it done against the number one team in the country. And again, Gonzaga is one of the best teams I've seen in a long time.
Luke, here's the other thing, too, about Virginia. The red flag for me is how many points people are scoring and the way they're getting to the basket. Pack mentioned this in the first hour about the pack line. Look, they're not defending nearly as well as most Virginia teams that we've become accustomed to the last couple of years. The other thing, too, is we're seeing a lot of teams that are struggling to get people guarded right now, especially in the ACC.
That's exactly it. You know, I just think these guys are missing the intangibles of Mamadi Diakite. I like Sam Hauser. I think he adds a new dimension. I really thought his shooting ability would give them a scoring punch and that defense would remain, because it's been there for so, so long with these Virginia teams. But like I said, they could not guard pick and rolls. Corey Kispert on pick and pops. He had five open threes to start that game. This does not look like a Virginia basketball team right now. And Kihei Clark, you scored 19 points. That's fantastic, but you had six turnovers. Every time he gets in the paint right now, it seems to be a tip pass out or a travel or a bad shot. These guys got to find a way to kind of slow down a little bit. It's crazy that we're saying that about Virginia basketball. But if I told you guys Virginia scores 75 points, you'd have said, man, they got a great chance to win that basketball game. And you would have said it's going to be very, very close if they don't. And we didn't get any of that.
Yeah, Gonzaga had 21 layups in the game. And I would tell you, you'd go back the last couple of years, Virginia wouldn't give up 21 layups in a month. They gave up 21 right. layups to the Zags on Saturday. All right, so let me fast forward. We were kidding around, Luke, about trying to do accounting for men's basketball, which would be almost impossible. That's why we should do it.
Yeah,
because people just would mock us, because you just have no idea. Who would you put number one right now in the ACC, today?
It's such a tough question. There are a lot of teams I think can emerge, but if I had to pick it right now, I'm going to say Florida State. I like that Leonard Hamilton plays so many guys early on in the season. I think that pays big-time dividends towards the end. You know, he's got to shorten that rotation, which he always does throughout the season. Right now, he's probably playing 12, 13, 14 guys a game. But you've got some of the alphas emerging in MJ Walker. I really like Anthony Polite. And we know how a dynamic and electric Scotty Barnes is, can do a little bit of everything. But, man, he is so unique. When he gets in the paint, he's almost always has a point guard guarding him, just because he's so good at facilitating that offense. And then when he gets inside, he's so good with little touch floaters, finding his teammates. This team is only going to get better. And I think about the pandemic environment, and I think about game by game, how these teams look different, how they've got to put the pieces to the puzzle together a little bit differently in each game. And when you have that amount of depth, when you have that many guys you can slot into different positions, I think that's really going to help Florida State. If you had to twist my arm today, I'm going to pick Florida State, but it could be several different teams as we get this thing going.
I think you're right.
So,
though.
See, there you go, Pack. We're walking that thin line with Florida State today.
No, I think
could
Luke's
be
right.
Somebody else tomorrow.
No, he's right.
I don't disagree.
Luke's right. I think Florida State would be the one today. But hey, you know, they got, like I said, they play Clemson tomorrow. You can ask me Wednesday morning. I may give you a completely, totally different answer.
That's exactly right. No question. Hey, Luke, thanks. Happy New Year. Looking forward to more hoops this week and the start of bowl season, but I always appreciate you spending time with us.
Happy holidays, fellas. I hope you all have a great new year, and let's just keep this basketball train rolling, fellas.
Amen.
That's it. You got that right. All right. Don't forget, we got a men's basketball doubleheader for you tomorrow night here on ACC Network. We get this thing cranked up at 6 o'clock. Miami visits Blacksburg to see number 24, Virginia Tech. And then Duke, back in action, hosts Pittsburgh at Cameron Indoor Stadium right here. Men's basketball presented by GEICO. A double dip tomorrow night here on ACC Network and always streaming on the ESPN app. 8:15 on a Monday. We told you we would do this. And next, we're going to do this. The best of wide receiver U, WRU. Coming up next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
And he comes down with it. What a catch by Davis. How about that catch? Jaleem McNeil.
320 pounds.
Luke downfield and Circus. One-handed catch is made.
Andrew Booth.
And that looks like an Odell Beckham type catch.
Packer and Durham. Now, this was a Monday staple during the football season called Wide Receiver U. And fans would nominate. They'd go to games. You watch it on television, whatever the case may be. You would nominate. We'd come on here on Monday. We'd give you a list of anywhere from 6 to 12 incredible catches, some by the defensive players. Then the smart folks in Bristol would narrow it to 4, and you would vote. And hence, we would have a Wide Receiver U winner. So, Wes, you came up with a good idea the other day. Hey, we should do a recap of the year of all the Wide Receiver U winners, and that is precisely what we're getting ready to present to the viewers and listeners.
This is also an excellent time for us to tell you that bowl season is just around the corner, kids, involving ACC teams. If you see one happen during a game involving an ACC team, make sure you use the hashtag WRU or the hashtag Packer and Durham to submit your Wide Receiver U candidate. Then, when the bowl season's over, we'll load it up one more time. But until the meantime, here we go. Let's start week one. And I went to Louisville on Halloween weekend to do a game, and they were still talking about Dez Fitzpatrick taking one from Malik Cunningham, splitting the double team, and off to the races. We had a great year.
This was an absolute steal. You're right. Zoop, catch a touch. And my man coming out of the corner.
Are we going to show my man in the end zone here?
Yeah, that's that was the best part.
Show my man in the end zone?
Ah, we missed.
Oh,
that's okay.
Missed my man.
That's all right. So Dez Fitzpatrick, the winner in week one. Some of these are unbelievably great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, week two, we go to Frank Howard Field at Clemson's Memorial Stadium. Didn't take long to excuse the Citadel, and didn't take long for Amari Rodgers to win.
Look at his bullet.
It's a great catch.
Throw wasn't bad.
Throw was really good.
You may be seeing those guys on Sunday, I'm a feeling, don't you? Well, Rodgers, Lawrence, some Sunday dudes out there.
I know the guy throwing it will definitely be on Sundays.
Yep. You got
the guy throwing it is already working on tax brackets in Duval County. All right. Anyway, let's
go to number income three, tax. That's a good news there for Trevor.
That's a good news. Yeah. Number three, Lavelle Davis was on the candidate list. From game one, Pack.
Yep. He's going to be a problem, folks. 81's going to be around for a couple more years, too. 6'7". He is a absolute freakazoid. Good luck with that. 81's
from
a problem.
Down in the low country. Yep. Great play by Lavelle Davis. All right. Week four, and we thought about calling this whole thing off in week four. We really did. Because in week four, we went to a standard, Mark.
Yeah, this is still my favorite one of the year. This is just goofy. There's 81 again. You already know 81 can catch it. Goodness gracious.
Golly. All right, now, At some point, we're going to take, after bowl season's over, we're going to have the wide receiver U of the year. And we'll obviously crown a winner of Wide Receiver University. I don't think I'm out on a limb saying that'll be one of the finalists.
Oh, I hate to, you know, cut to the chase here. I think that was the winner, but we'll see.
I understand. Well, we have games left. We have postseason play.
I understand.
Unlike some voting that occurs on these awards, we can wait until the end, right? Until all the teams have played all their games. All right. Let's go to week five. Big man touchdown. That's all I'm saying.
You had the call.
I did. Batted in the air, picked my own shot, and score. Come on now.
I love it.
Look at that. Two-hand bat, 320 coming at you. Nice try.
And, you know, we give love to the defensive players. It, you know, wide receiver, you doesn't have to be a, you know, 6'3", 195-pound, you know, dude out there. You could be anybody making a catch, right? So there you go. Back-to-back defensive winners.
Week six. This has a chance to be a finalist. Secretly good.
Yeah, that angle doesn't do it justice.
This one does.
Yeah. Oop, doink, off the head.
By the way, holds it all the way through till he hits the ground, just in case anybody on Sunday had a whistle.
Don't bring up your AJ Terrell move yesterday, because I thought you boys were going to steal one yesterday. Thought you had it.
I'm not getting into that. You're the one brought it up. I'm not talking about it.
I brought it up.
I know.
I can't help you guys are bad.
Thayer Thomas, by the way, NC State, great job. Week seven, let's go to the Hard Rock. Tony Poljan on the back line. Soft shoe.
That was nice. Really
nice. It's a big guy making an athletic move.
Yes, sir. Underrated catch.
For those of you, by the way, for those of you scoring at home, if the right foot touches before the left foot, it's out of bounds. So there you go. Number eight, more soft shoe. This time, Tutu Atwell banging into the sidelines. It's a rope. It's a great catch.
Yes, it is.
Bang, bang.
I can't wait to see Tutu on Sundays. You know what? I mean, he's got such great speed, great hands. I mean, if he goes to the right team, he could have a dynamic, dynamic Sunday career.
I got two words for you. Drew Brooks, our producer, may fight me on this one. I got two words for Tutu Atwell. Tyreek Hill. There you go. Week nine, Zay Flowers of Boston College. And this was called to our attention during the game when the catch was made.
Yep. Tell you, Zay Flowers had some great catches this year. He was nominated multiple times this season and finally got a WRU award winner. But he had a great year.
Yep.
He really did.
Yep. Hey, Wisconsin, you're going to go to the Duke's Mayo Bowl Classic Charlotte next week? Yep. Uptown Charlotte right there with Pack. The Badgers might want to keep an eye. You're looking at Ja'Cory Roberson and all these guys at Wake Forest. You might want to keep an eye on Taylor Morin, because this guy right here makes plays now. This guy makes plays. This is a dime from Sam Hartman, too. It's a great catch.
Remember this game? This game had like 7 or 8 catches. And we were like, goodness, we could do a wide receiver use segment just with this game alone. And, of course, the next week, the Pitt-Clemson game, or the week, and it was right after that, had the same kind of thing where it was at least a dozen unbelievable catches.
All right, week 11, DJ Turner makes the list. Weekly winner and a catch against the Hokies. Catch and run.
Yeah, you only had, like, what, 15 catches in that game? Like, a Virginia Tech. Yep. I mean, at some point in time, I don't know, maybe a double team. Just asking. Just saying. 15 touches.
Yeah. All right. Next up, week 12, the only two-time winner, if you will. Andrew Booth again.
Oh, goodness gracious. Superman, look at this. This game, this was the game I was talking about that must have had at least 10 crazy catches in it.
Yeah. All purple. Love the all purple, by the way. Just telling everybody. Week 13. Saturday night, sneaky play, Virginia Tech, Clemson, and Raheem Blackshear.
Reach. Just reach.
Think about how close this is to being a touchdown.
A reach, and it's a touch. No reach, no touch, no soup.
Yep. There you go. All right, last week of the regular season, let's go to the Hard Rock again. Tony Grimes, the rookie from Carolina. Another defensive play. This is just grand theft right here. D. Wiggins, why are you not grabbing the football? Oh, wait. No. Oh, you don't have it.
The good news is that Tony Grimes will be back on that same field coming up later this weekend.
Yeah, that's true.
I got good news for Mac Brown. Mac, he is going to be with you this weekend. Oh, Mac will join us coming up in about 45 minutes.
Oh, man. All right. Championship week. This one was over, too, when this one was made.
Forget it. Good night.
Yeah, yeah. Things are going right along, and all of a sudden, E.J. Williams just went, wow.
It's mine. He's going to be around for another couple years, too. Old Dabo's been bragging about this dude. He said this guy's going to be a star.
Yeah. By the way, there was nobody else on the nomination list from this game.
No, we stopped
it was
it
over
after
when this
catch.
Was made.
Yeah, he made the catch. Yeah, we decided exactly. No more nominations for the week.
No.
Sorry.
All right.
It's a great group.
So, again, it is a great group. Thanks to our staff for putting those together, the weekly winners of Wide Receiver U. Again, the hashtag is WRU. You can use the hashtag Packer and Durham. Heck, you can tag Marg and me on Twitter if you like to submit your nominations from bowl season, and that includes Clemson and Notre Dame semifinals. We'll kind of work our way through that, and then we'll come up with the finalist, and then we'll select maybe four finalists out of all the weekly winners in the postseason and let you vote for Wide Receiver U. And who knows, good luck and good fortune for us, Pac. Maybe we get this year's winner on the show.
Be nice. Starts with the Canes tomorrow. Cheez-It Bowl. Get it all over you. And a very important game for the Canes, right? We're going to talk about it, more tomorrow. But huge game for the Canes. Because the last time we saw them play, not so hot. They need W in this bowl coming up.
Yep. All right, we got some football news for you coming back, including a return to Miami that is noted for 21, among others. And we will talk about Miami getting it cranked up against the Pokes tomorrow in the Cheez-It game. Yep, they play for all the cheddar crackers you can get your hands on tomorrow. We'll touch on that right after this on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday, 844-SAY-ACCN, the number for the program. We got Reese Davis and Mac Brown in the Power Hour coming up, so hang tight with all that stuff. But we also have football coming up tomorrow for the ACC as far as bowl goes. And that includes De'Eriq King being front and center. Mm-hmm. And really great news. For not only De'Eriq, but also Miami and the ACC, with that announcement on Twitter and social media over the weekend, Wes, that De'Eriq said, hey, you know what? Life's good. I'm coming back to Coral Gables. I mean, to me, it's a win-win-win, like you said, in hour number one. It's great news for everybody involved.
Absolutely, and I think it's it also adds to what is probably not being recognized beyond the walls of the conference at this point. Tell you what now, the quarterback position in the ACC in 2021, and I know we've have an unknown now with the transfer of Chase Bryce out of Duke, certainly where Virginia Tech's concerned, there's a lot of unknown there, potentially a quarterback. I think Braxton Burmeister would be the one coming back. But when you start thinking about the quarterback position in the ACC, Here's the David Hale tweet. The only team that will not return a quarterback with starting experience in 2021 is Duke. That's in the league. I mean, Mark, we had that dip after Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, Mitch Trubisky. Remember, we had that 1 year, rode the mountain, and then went down, right? Well, now you had a great group, and guess what? This one's going to be solid too, even without Trevor Lawrence returning and some of these other guys. I mean, Phil Jurkovec had a great year, but Kenny Pickett and De'Eriq King coming back, that is significant in this league. And certainly having Mackenzie Milton transfer in, bless his and health, and hope he's back to 100%. Think about the quarterback power in this league next year, just on paper alone.
Yeah, we know that Trevor Lawrence is going to be a Heisman finalist. There will be all kinds of hype with Sam Howell at North Carolina as a potential Heisman finalist as well, the numbers he could put up. But the league should be outstanding. And the quarterback play, as I told you before the season started, I thought this year the ACC's quarterbacks top to bottom would be far superior to everybody. You pick a league. I don't care which one you pick. Mm-hmm. You won't be able to go as far as quality, depth, and quarterback play as you have this year in the ACC. Next year is going to be spectacular too, which is a great sign for a conference that is on the up and coming, because – we've told you about, right now there's more ACC teams in the college football playoff top 25 than any other league. There's more ACC teams in the college football playoffs than any other league. The league is heading in the right direction. It's, like I said, it's a strange year because football is going through this uptick and men's basketball is kind of like this unknown, which is, it's normally the exact opposite from that perspective, but it is what it is. But from a football perspective, the league should be in great shape. And that leads us to De'Eriq King, I think, in Miami tomorrow, Wes. I think this is a really important game for Manny Diaz. I mean, that last effort or lack thereof against North Carolina really left a bad taste in a lot of folks' mouth. Like, hey, whoa. Miami made such great strides, and that was such a dud performance that here's a team that's lost 9 of their last 10 bowls. You kind of think that, hey, there's got to be a sense of, hey, that's not who we are. And with the news that De'Eriq King's coming back next year, you open with Alabama in 21. This feels like an important game for Miami tomorrow.
I totally agree with you, Mark, and I think it's one where you kind of got to look and say, okay, what are we going to be about? What are we going to be about this year? What are we going to be about next year? And for all the finality that the Independence Bowl loss to Louisiana Tech gave last year, you kind of have a sense that the Cheez-It Bowl tomorrow against Oklahoma State is almost kind of like a move toward 2021 at the same time, right? Miami did so many good things this year that now if you can take the bowl and build momentum, you're going to go flying into 2021 if you're Manny Diaz. You're going to go in now with somebody who is front of mind in terms of what the next fall could be like, not just in the ACC, but nationally as well. You'll be one of those conversation points that people say, well, wait a second, Clemson's going to be good, but how about Miami? And I think that's a big, big statement for the job he's not only done, but also the momentum that's been created by the presence of number one at quarterback, too.
Well, not only do you have De'Eriq King coming back, you also threw in a top 10 recruiting class. And you want momentum, right? I mean, you don't want this thing to be like last year, where you went LLL being shut out in a bowl and all of a sudden people were screaming, oh, my God, he's on the hot seat after 1 year. I mean, that's the last thing you need if you're Manny Diaz or Miami football fans. You just want to say, hey, you know what? The North Carolina game, it stunk. Yeah, we laid an egg, but that's not who we are. So you bounce back, hopefully, with a great performance tomorrow night where people go, hey, you know what? That Miami team, other than that one game, they played some pretty good football, and they got their guy back at quarterback in a top 10 recruiting class, and you can kind of feel the bill because people are going to be buzzing about Miami and Alabama as a 21 season opener. But you don't want to have another one of those stinkers in a bowl. And again, I think Miami's sick and tired of losing bowls. Like I told you, 9 of the last 10 have been L's, and for a program that takes so much pride in their past, in their history of national championships, and here's how we play, and it's the U, and all that stuff. This is one of those kind of moments, I think, coming off the North Carolina game. I expect Miami to play well tomorrow night. At least that's what I'm looking for. Yeah. I know it's a late afternoon kick, but it's the first of the ACC teams in bowls, and it's certainly worthy of keeping an eye on.
Absolutely. By the way, and I'm not telling Cam Gorby at Miami or Jeremy Sharp at North Carolina how to do their jobs, but you got Heisman candidates next fall, boys. De'Eriq King is on a list of players in college football that's pretty impressive when you start thinking about most games with a passing and rushing touchdown. This guy's made it a formality when it comes to stuff like that. 21 times he's had at least a passing score and a rushing score in a ball game. And when you start to look at the list of active players that's involved on that, I mean, Sam Ehlinger, he won't catch him. Kellen Mond, he won't catch him. I mean, the guy is a threat, and the ACC is staring down the barrel of at least two of these guys next fall right now with King and Howell.
And you get the high-profile opener with Alabama. I mean, it's sitting there for the taking, right, if you're De'Eriq King in Miami.
Sure is.
But you want to finish off this year and go, hey, guess what? That was a nice win. It's not the finish line for us, but you don't want to go LL into 21, right? Especially that North Carolina game, which was – let's be honest, it was embarrassing if you're a Miami fan. Mm-hmm. That was not who you are. So that's why we put the emphasis on, hey, it's not a New Year's Day 6 game. It's not in the college football playoff, but it is a very, very important game for Miami.
Yeah, no question about it. And be interesting to watch the Canes get after it against Oklahoma State, who, by the way, won't have Chuba Hubbard among the opt-outs that Mike Gundy's team has had, too. That could be a high-scoring wild ride, couldn't it?
Yes. And, you know, OK State, and they're a strange lot to figure out, too. I mean, there are times or weekends you watch them play and you say, man, the Pokes are pretty good. There's also weekends you watch them play and you go, I don't know what Gundy and the boys are doing. So there's a lot of intrigue in that game because you're not exactly sure what you're going to get, really, from either one of them. But I just know from the last time you played, and you know they heard about it, right? I mean, that wasn't one of those games where you lost and a day later everybody's going about their business. That was one of those kind of performances that people are buzzing about. Hey, all the good things you did, you gave it away. Well, you didn't do all that, but that was one of those kind of games. If you won it, you're going to be playing in the Orange Bowl, right? And of course, granted, they play there all the time, but that would have been a step up. Kind of what Mac feels like. Hey, this is a step up for us to get to a game like that. Miami just wants to put that rearview mirror and let's get after it. So, again, I can't wait to see how that plays out tomorrow.
Yeah, oh, I'm with you on that. Interesting ball game for sure with the Canes and Cowboys tomorrow. We got you covered for the college football playoff right here on ACC Network, and we're pleased to tell you about our day-long coverage that starts with a special brunch edition of Packer and Durham, Mark, at 11 a.m. Brunch. Emphasis on brunch, Pack.
I like it. I'm all for it.
Get you there at 11, and then 2 o'clock, we turn it right on over. Maybe that's one of those vaunted live tosses on ACC Network to the huddle for a two-hour run-up to the Notre Dame radio telecast with Paul Burmeister. And then at 8, we'll switch the dial, go from Paul Burmeister to Don Munson, Tim Beret, Reggie Merriweather. They'll have the call of Clemson and Ohio State. The huddle back after the ball game, huddle after dark. It's a staple on this network. And they'll break down the two college football playoff semifinals involving the ACC. When we come back, Dabo Swinney and Tom Rinaldi about Clemson and Ohio State next week from the Louisiana Superdome. All that and more coming up next on Packer and Durham.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday on ACC Network. Don't freak out. In 21, we will continue to stream live on the ESPN app. That is not going to go away. Take that with us always.
Yeah. How about brunch on Friday? You excited?
We're going to have a little cooking segment as part of that show. And again, I'm an early riser, but I love brunch. Love brunch. May have to bring out the mug like it did for the Christmas special for brunch on New Year's Day. Just saying.
I might shove some vegetables in a glass at brunch.
Ugh, veggies getting away. They're getting away.
Gotta You're missing the point. No, anyway.
I hear you. Tomato sauce. Let's go.
There you go. That's right. I got you. Clemson and Ohio State will meet on Friday in game two of the college football playoffs at the Allstate Sugar Bowl in the Louisiana Superdome. I think I got all the tags in there. Clemson and Ohio State are going to meet for the third time in that environment, but are they rivals? That's an interesting question. The Tigers have won both of the two previous matchups in the CFP, the blowout, of course, at the Fiesta Bowl a few years ago. But last year, much closer as Tom Rinaldi visits with Dabo.
We hope you're ready. The undefeated Buckeyes, the undefeated Tigers for a slot in the championship game.
Lawrence takes a shotgun snap and a run up the middle.
Lawrence in a foot race. Touchdown, Tigers!
What a run by Trevor Lawrence!
Unbelievable.
Hello, New Orleans. Here comes Clemson.
Trevor sat in here and he said something which I thought was, you know, insightful. He said, I know it might sound odd to say, but I feel like Clemson-Ohio State is a rivalry, even though we don't play them that often. You nod your head. Why?
I think we have similar programs in that, you know, Ryan, I think we value similar things. We recruit against each other in a lot of areas, and then obviously we've played each other several times.
At number three,
drama.
Oh, my goodness.
Ohio State.
If you talk to the coaches, the what should happen debate doesn't include Ohio State getting into this bracket.
You've been clear on this point throughout, Dabo, about the number of games as a metric has to matter maybe as much as ever, given how difficult the grind has been this season. So you rank Ohio State 11th, and it creates a huge reaction, all right? How would you characterize the reaction to that ranking? Why Ohio State 11?
Yeah, overreaction. First of all, my poll don't mean anything, but it means something to me. You know, it's my poll. I do it. It creates a stir because it just so happened to be playing Ohio State. It has nothing to do with Ohio State. Absolutely zero. You could change the name to Michigan or Georgia or Florida or Tennessee or Nebraska. Anytime you have a top 10, it should be that's special. This year, it's like really, really, really special. And I wanted it to be that way. And so I, you know, wanted to recognize the teams that played nine games or more. And so if you didn't play nine games, I just didn't consider you for the top 10. That's why they were 11. Obviously, they're a great team. They're plenty good enough and talented enough to beat us, good enough to go win the national championship. But in my opinion, I don't think that it's right that – you know, three teams have to play 13 games to win it all, and one team has to play eight? What universe am I living in? And it has nothing to do with them. It was about qualifying. And I didn't think they were qualified based on the number of games versus all these other teams, you know, that are being, in my opinion, Texas A&M, Florida, Oklahoma, Cincinnati, they got punished for playing more games.
Number two, Clemson, and number three, Ohio State on ESPN Friday night in the Allstate Sugar Bowl. Looking forward to that. And more on that conversation, I'm sure, as the week unfolds, too.
Well, I will tell you this. Had Dabo Swinney put Tennessee or Michigan at number 11, I'd have called him up and said, son, you come on now. What are you doing? You crazy? Those two teams combined didn't win five games, did they? Maybe they did win five. Whatever. But the point was taken. And he's right. You know, that poll doesn't mean squat. We're going to kick this thing off on New Year's Day, and best team wins. We're going to keep score, and these matter now. Notre Dame, Clemson, two ACC teams in the Final Four. It's go time. But this Ohio State-Clemson series, and, Wes, I have a funny feeling we're going to see this game a lot this century, this upcoming decade. They just seem to be so dominant right now in their respective leagues that they just seem kind of destined to see each other a bunch. Again, there's no guarantees. ACC will have some teams that will push the Tigers next year, and maybe the Big Ten will bounce back. I don't think their league was very good at all this year, but Ohio State is. But it just seems like Clemson and Ohio State are kind of destined to see each other a bunch, I think, this upcoming 10 years coming up. Just feels that way.
Yeah. Well, and think about it. You know, if you go all the way back to the Taj Boyd Orange Bowl, You know, that was the first meeting since the Woody Hayes game at the Gator Bowl, as I recall, right?
That is right. In fact, I was goofing around with some numbers this weekend. Just to put things in perspective, this will be the fourth mm-hmm. time Clemson will have played Ohio State since 2013. And to put it in perspective, if, again, the biggest word in sports, if mm-hmm. Clemson wins this game and they're favored, they will go 4-0 against Ohio State since 2013. That will be four wins for Clemson. In that same time period from 2013 to right now, the best the Big Ten has done against Ohio State is Michigan State with two wins. Clemson will have had four. Let that marinate a second if the Tigers take care of business. Even if they don't, they still have more wins against Ohio State than what the Big Ten's best effort has been against the Buckeyes. That's how Clemson has owned Ohio State.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens Friday night in New Orleans at the Louisiana Superdome in the ballgame with the Buckeyes and Tigers. And, of course, more on the Irish and the Tide as well. And we may do our own numbers crunch. Brad Edwards gave us some stuff last week. We may do our own numbers crunching by the time we get around to the brunch show.
I'm ready.
On Friday at 11 a.m. Are you ready? You ready already to crunch numbers?
I'm ready right now. I got all kinds of numbers.
No. All right, we got Monday, we got basketball, we got all sorts of other things. Heck, we got to talk Reese Davis here coming up. We got Heisman conversation with RD. We got plenty of things we got to do.
And how about our buddy Tim Beray, the legend, came up with a stat too, speaking of number crunching. And he gave us a little stat just to let you marinate on this for a couple days before we get to kickoff. And here's a Tim Beray special right here. Clemson's a combined 8-0 in bowl games against Ohio State, Oklahoma, and Notre Dame. Three of the top five programs in football bowl subdivision history. As far as victories goes, Clemson is 8-0 against those three in bowl games. It's pretty good. Not bad.
All right. No, not bad at all. All right, step aside here. Reese coming up, top of the hour. We'll visit with him. Mac Brown going to join us on camera from Chapel Hill. We'll talk to the head coach of the Tar Heels. He's headed to the Capital One Orange Bowl to see A&M later in the week as well. Looking forward to that visit. We got some ground to cover. Power Hour, and it starts off strong on a Monday. Reese Davis live from the Palatial Estate in Connecticut. That's next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham.